Good morning. My name is Jim Graham, and I'm chair of the Metro WMATA Board of Directors, and I now call to order this 1,348th meeting of the Board of Directors. It is now 11:20 on January the 28th, 2010. As our first order of business, I want to recognize and honor Jeff Garrard and Song Oh. Both worked as automatic control technicians at Metro. Mr. Garrard was almost 20 years, and Mr. Oh had 12 years with Metro. Both were killed on early Tuesday morning, and so I'd ask for you to join with me in a moment of silence in their memory and in their honor. Thank you. Metro WMATA is working very, very closely with the families and loved ones of our lost employees, and I'm sure that there will be more on this as we proceed in time. Now, we have before us the first order of business is the public comment period. We had quite a lot of public comment last evening, but now we have a regular public comment section of this board meeting. And we have three public commenters, starting with Craig Simpson, who is here on behalf, I assume, of ATU. Mr. Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, board members. I don't usually or ordinarily address you in this forum, but these are not ordinary times. And when I heard about the deaths of Jeff Garrard and Sun Duck Oh, I'm rarely surprised by events these days, but I must admit I was shocked. And struggled to understand how this could happen. In the wake of that, I was gratified by the general manager's letter to employees, in which he, explicitly stated it was everyone's responsibility to stop unsafe practices at Metro. And I was gratified by that response, and further by his assurance that the upper management supported all employees' efforts to do so. And I believe that he means those words, and I believe his top team means those words. I'm also gratified by Chief Taborn's efforts to collaborate with the union to to ensure that safety on the right-of-way is improved dramatically. But I don't think that in itself is, there's a component missing here. When I talk to employees from departments who work out on the right-of-way, they told me stories that were frankly astonishing to me, that some of the practices that they say they routinely engage in lacked basic safety protections. And when I asked them why, they said, we're not going to say anything because if I go over this manager's head, if I go over the supervisor's head, he's going to get back at me. And so as we talk about changing a safety culture, we have to put some things in place to protect those employees. And when I looked at law, if we were covered by railway safety law, we would have federal whistleblower protections in place, but we're not. And if we were covered by OSHA, well, we are covered perhaps by the state agencies in Maryland and Virginia, but not in the District of Columbia. We would also have protections. So in the absence of legal protections, I'm asking you today to provide, to pass a resolution by the board, not necessarily today at this moment, but to consider a resolution by the board that would provide so-called whistleblower protections to employees who report violations to those within the company, to a federal agency, to local governments or their agencies, to the Tri-State Oversight Commission, and other appropriate forums, so that they know that this board has their back if they report unsafe practices. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Simpson. Speaking as one member of this board, I'd like to see the proposal that you have in mind. and I know the general manager would also be willing to review it, and we can certainly consider that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there further comment or question from members of the board? Thank you very much, Mr. Simpson. Michael Ball is our next public commentator from the state of Maryland.
Before I get to what I wrote down, I just wanted to make a comment about what the ATU representative just said. What Warren Buffett at Berkshire Hathaway has done is he's instituted anonymous whistleblower things where basically employees, random employees, can just make comments about issues in the company, and no one will know they made that comment. And I think that's something also that should be considered at WMATA to improve safety. I want to continue by thanking Mr. Cato for his service to the community over the years. And yes, the general manager of Metro is absolutely a community service job. The DC area's economy depends on Metro to take cars off the road and help get employees to work on time. Even with Metro, our traffic is some of the worst in the nation. And without Metro, there's no knowing what kind of gridlock there would be, how debilitating it would be, and how many companies couldn't afford the effects on morale and lack of productivity. Because of Metro's influence on our economy and our region, it isn't hype to say that the general manager of Metro has more influence on our regional economy and well-being than any local government official, with the exception of the mayor of D.C. Mr. Cato has always been courteous to me in my encounters, and I know he's never had to be. So, Mr. Cato, I wish you well in your future endeavors. As for its successor, I nominate Jim Graham. He has been a top-notch chairman of the Metro Board, and he has a more directive leadership style that Mr. Cato thinks is best for Metro in the coming years. Like Mr. Cato, he's always been courteous to me when I've encountered him. And above all that, he knows WMATA inside and out. Considering the budget issue that Metro is in, we need somebody who can hit the ground running and not take time getting up to speed. There's no one I know of better equipped for that than Jim Graham. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Ball. I was about to extend your remarks time because I most sincerely did not want you to rush through your comments. You touched me. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Now we go to the next witness, and whose first name is Susan. Do I see Wiltshire? Pardon me? Will Schusen. Okay, Susan, Susan Will Schusen, is that right?
Yes.
From the District of Columbia. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm originally from Long Island, but I wanted to talk with you today. I first wanted to thank you for the opportunity to talk with your board with WMATA, and to ask you to remember September 11th and somebody who I'm not worthy to invoke the name of, Todd Beamer, who is said to have said on Flight 93 before everybody perished on the airliner, are you ready? Let's roll. I ask you to be ready and take the initiative in getting a system of sensors installed with your capital improvement projects. I ask you to incorporate into those projects sensors to detect hazardous materials, biohazard, hazmat, pathogens, all manner of explosives, liquid, unmixed, mixed, powder, liquid components, IEDs. I ask you to do this because no DHS officer, no matter how vigilant, is able to see through opaque surfaces as a practical matter. Everybody knows this. Yet I'm not sure why technology is not being utilized to help people have better accuracy and reliability in detecting terrorism, terror weapons, terrorists. I ask you to network those sensors to relay sense threat data real time to an interoperable interagency communication system, and to network that to an interagency interoperable supercomputer system capable of query capability, tapping the power of relational database technology to utilize facial recognition software, biometric sensors, iris scans, fingerprint scans, to detect terrorists before they get into an airport, before they get into a subway station, and to add to any database of known terrorists, people found to have weapons. If you utilize technology, you'll have a better chance of staving off a terror attack and avoiding the unnecessary loss of life, infrastructure, wealth, and economic continuity that a terror attack does to a society. I ask you to do this in Washington, D.C., and to work with your counterparts in other major cities. I'm not sure why this technology has not been applied to the problem of terrorism to alleviate the unnecessary uncertainty that exists when technology isn't present to help people more effectively avoid unnecessary terror attacks and all of the damage that is concomitant with a terror attack. I've been trying for a number of years unsuccessfully to ask city councils, mayors, to implement a very practical method of reducing the potential for unnecessary loss of terror attacks. And I ask you, please, to take the initiative. I'm not an engineer, I'm not a systems designer, a public official, zoning official, so I cannot do this myself. But I am very certain that if this project were implemented, that it would significantly reduce the potential for unnecessary loss of life, wealth, economic continuity, and infrastructure. That is a looming threat. In fact, on December 25th, everybody saw ample evidence that there is not yet in place a system that is adequate to protect against the risk of an additional terror attack. Not only that, but 200 to 300 more attacks were promised from Yemen, where this attack emanated on the Northwest Airlines flight on Christmas of 2009. In addition, there have been other threats of terror attacks. Recently in the news, Osama bin Laden was quoted as saying that there would be an attempt to hijack an additional airplane. I ask you, please, I don't think TSA, DHS, a bureaucracy, people putting their lives on the line without the tools to be able to adequately detect terror weapons is really fair to them. I think it's asking too much of them. And I ask you, please, to utilize technology that exists to better detect terror weapons and terrorists, whether it's sensor packs on buildings that they have on the West Coast, or whether it's individual sensors, fiber optic technology. I'm not sure what form the sensors and the network and computer system would take, but I am confident, if I may say, that the technology exists and the expertise exists, and I ask you to network with your counterparts in other cities and in Washington, D.C. to get this project started this month and to get even a pathogen detector installed in your major subway stations before the next 30 days are over. I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your time, and thank you for your contribution.
Thank you.
Are there any comments on the testimony? Okay, thank you. Now we proceed to the approval of the agenda. I move the agenda. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been seconded by Mr. Benjamin. Is there discussion of the agenda? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. The agenda is approved. I move approval of the minutes as if read. Is there a second?
Second.
And seconded by Mr. Benjamin. This is the minutes for December 17, 2009, January 7, 2010, special board meeting, January 14, 2010, special board meeting. Is there a discussion or changes in the minutes? Discussion, discussion, discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. Those three sets of minutes are approved. We now proceed to the report of the Writers Advisory Council. Chairperson Zinkel is here.
Okay, second time's the charm. Thank you very much, Chairman Graham and members of the board. I am here to present you with the Writers Advisory Council for January 2010. At our January 6th meeting, we had two presentations on the WMATA budget, a presentation on the 2010 budget, by Matt Brown, Jim Hamery, and Jim Hughes, which discussed the state of the 2010 budget as well as some of the proposals for service reductions that you will be voting on today. Our members had a number of comments, many of which were reiterated at last night's public hearing, and I will not go into further detail at this point. Many of those comments are listed in my written report, which of course is available on the agency's website under the Board of Directors agenda for today's meeting. We also had a presentation by Mr. Brown on the 2011 budget, which while we had little discussion on that, I think it was disconcerting to many members of the RAC that not only are we talking about immediate service reductions to address the 2010 shortfall, but we're looking at a much more serious situation for the budget, which the board will have to move on in the next several months for next year. And we reiterate much of what we did last year when service cuts were on the table, that the service that we have now in many places is really a bare minimum. We have many overcrowded buses. The rail system is very crowded during rush hour and even at times not during rush hour. And we need the service we have. We need to talk about more service, not less. Next, I would also like to thank Mr. Benjamin for accepting our longstanding offer to have board members come and present and meet with us at our monthly meetings. Mr. Benjamin came by to discuss the bylaw amendments and expressed that he needed the council to elect a chair that he could work with and that he knew he could work with several members from Montgomery County. Following that, we also held our elections for the 2010 year. So starting February 3rd, Frank DiBernardo of Maryland will be chair of the RAC. Dharm Gurswamy of Virginia will be the first vice chair. And David Alpert of the District of Columbia will be second vice chair. I should also mention that we did have one gentleman, Mr. Leroy Morgan, who also appeared at last night's meeting, come and express concerns about Metro maintaining a holiday schedule on holidays. That was his very strongly held opinion, is that on all holidays, regardless of the day of the week, Metro should maintain a holiday schedule, and if they don't, someone else should fund it. We are looking forward to welcoming two new members from Fairfax County, who I understand will be appointed today. And of course, let me also welcome our two new board members, Mr. Acosta and Mr. Downey, our new federal representatives. Just let me reiterate, we're all very glad that you're here and look forward to working with you. And on behalf of our incoming chair, I will extend to you what I have extended several times to all of our board members voting an alternate. Please feel free to come to any of our meetings first Wednesdays of the month starting at 6:30. We're happy to have any of you to come and talk with us and get to know our members. As I know you're aware, we are all volunteers. Many of us are busy day and night. This is a time when it's easy to get the entire group together, and we appreciate any time you can make to come visit with us. And we appreciate all of the past visits as well as the time that you have made for us offline as well to meet with RAC members in the past. Now, on behalf of the entire RAC, let me also express appreciation to Mr. Cato for all of his efforts on behalf of Metro over the past years and wish him well in his retirement. And I'm also going to ask on behalf of all of the Washington, the National Capital Region, I would ask you as you manage your departure from this agency, and I'm sure this is going to involve an extended exit process with the board and with the authority, I would also ask that you write an exit memo not just to the folks here, not just to the jurisdictions, but to the people of the National Capital Region. And you know, maybe the Washington Post will help you get it out there so that everyone can read it. Maybe nail it to the door of Metro. But I would like, on behalf of the riders and the people of this area, for you to tell all of us publicly what you think and what you think Metro needs in the future, the qualities in a general manager, ideas for the organization, ideas for the system. And I think that's something that could be of value to everyone, not just the management of this organization, the board, and the jurisdictions. And with that, I thank you very much for your time, and I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Chairperson Zinkel. On behalf of the board, I wish to express our appreciation for your service this past year as chairperson. It was the opportunity for the District of Columbia to chair the RAC, and we very much appreciate your diligent and dedicated efforts. Could we have a round of applause for Chairperson Zinkel? Is there further comment or question? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. If I may, I would like to clarify my visit to the Riders Advisory Council. What I did do, and it's similar to what Ms. Zinkel said, but I would characterize it slightly differently, was the current bylaws of the Riders Advisory Council do in fact require the same type of rotation as the board carries out in terms of who is the chair. And I encourage them to at least retain that rotation for one more year, which would have meant that somebody from the state of Maryland would be elected. I would point out that although I meet regularly with the people, or I have met with the people from Montgomery County, the person who was elected, and who is, by the way, an excellent chairperson, was Frank DiBernardo from Prince George's County. And I will look forward, if I am made the chair here, I will look forward to working closely with him, because he's the kind of person that I really believe will work wonders both for the Riders Advisory Council and for Metro as a whole.
Thank you very much. We'll now proceed to our agenda. And the next item on the agenda is our swearing-in ceremony. In anticipation of this item, I do want to say, because there has been some different kind of information put out here, is that the presence of today of one voting member and one alternate member appointed by the General Services Administration was very much a function of the action of our jurisdictions to approve compact amendments, which was done on a very expeditious basis. The federal law was passed in December, and by February, each of our jurisdictions had acted to approve the compact amendments, thereby authorizing the presence of federal members. We are thus delighted to welcome the federal members, because we were very anxious about this, and we're very willing to put this into place. And so we have two of the members with us today, and I would ask Mr. Mortimer Downey and Mr. Marcel Acosta to please join me in the center. I guess, do we do it over here? I think that's what we've done.
Hereby solemnly swear the office of the office upon which I'm about to enter, upon which I'm about to enter. Congratulations.
Now, not only do we have two new federal members, but we also have two Marcells. I'm sure we'll work through that. All right. Now, our next item of business is approval of revisions to the Writers Advisory Council bylaws. You have before you in your binder a resolution, which I will now move. Approval of. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Is there discussion on the revisions to the Writers Advisory Council bylaws? Discussion? Discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. Those revisions are adopted. Our next order of business is Writers Advisory Council appointments. And you have in your binder, a resolution of this board on this matter, which I now move. Is there a second? Mrs. Hudson's?
I would like to move it with a slight amendment.
Mrs. Hudson's seconds the motion and wishes to speak to the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The motion is moving the appointment of two persons, Clayton Sinai and Mr. Robert Katrine. In addition, I would like to add the reappointment of Evelyn Tomaszewski for a term expiring in 2012. So I would move it through.
So may I be clear on what is the motion before us at this time? We would have the appointment of Clayton Sina, and Robert Petrine, and then you propose to add the reappointment
of Evelyn Tomaszewski.
Evelyn Tomaszewski.
Expiring 2012.
To a term expiring 2012. Is that clear? Is the motion clear? It has been moved and seconded. We without objection, we will accept the modification proposed by Mrs. Hutchins. So discussion, discussion, discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. And that resolution is adopted. We now proceed to the report of the General Manager, Mr. Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I will keep the report very brief today given the schedule that we have. The information that's in your book, I think we've covered it in other committee meetings and at the press, which to have some of this information, we can provide it to them. I would like to welcome our new board members, Director Downey and Director Acosta. I look forward to working with you over the time that I have left. And I'm sure you're going to enjoy your time here and the experience that you bring is very important to this organization. As we commonly do on a monthly basis, we like to recognize an employee who really has been exceptional and extraordinary in their performance. And I'm going to ask Dave Kugachek, who's the Acting Deputy General Manager for Operations, to highlight that employee, and Mr. Chair, I ask that you join me in the center of the room to welcome that employee up and to give them an accommodation or certificate for their outstanding performance.
Good morning. If I could have Mr. Dixon come to the center as well. This month's outstanding employees, Mr. Patrick Dixon. He's Senior Rail Operations Supervisor at our Largo Division. Mr. Dixon has distinguished himself through dedicated service. His exemplary performance last month when we needed him most attests to his professional knowledge, willingness to accept responsibility, attention to detail, and the ability to adapt himself to any assignment or situation. This past December, as the metropolitan area was brought to a standstill due to a major snowstorm, Supervisor Dixon did not hesitate to answer our call of duty. He packed his work bag and reported to work early Saturday morning. and stayed continuous until closing Monday night. During this storm, he ensured that operations continued to, as smoothly as possible by transporting employees to and from. He took it upon himself to shovel driveways, digging out cars, coordinating other work assignments, and responding to mainline incidents. On Monday night, after all of this, and we'd weathered the storm, he once again stepped up to begin support for operational activities for the Washington Redskins football game. Supervisor Dixon is an all-around team player, and that's why he's being recognized as an Employee Spotlight Award.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That completes my presentation.
Thank you very much. Mr. Zimmerman?
Mr. Cato, I was under the impression that today was the day the FY 2011 budget was to have been delivered, and I guess I thought that would be part of your report. Is it in part of a different part of the agenda, or have I missed something?
It is at a different part of the agenda. I believe it's at the executive session, if I'm correct. That's where it was placed at the request. I believe that's the request of the board. We do have it.
I was not aware of the board having made such a request, but the budget, if it's to be, I mean, whether it's to be presented or not, and I guess since it wasn't ready for the Finance Committee 2 weeks ago, and I thought that we understood that it was going to be presented here today, with or without presentation, when is it to be released to the public?
We have the copies of the budget with us today, and we will present that to the board whenever the board is ready for us to do so.
Okay, I then, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd have to ask you the question. When is it we are to receive the budget?
Perhaps it's appropriate for me to say something at this point. It was a decision that was made by Mr. Benjamin and myself. We wanted to have certain, well, number one, we wanted to see it, and I hadn't seen it. And number two, we wanted to see it first in our executive session. It should be available. It should be available today. There's no reason to believe it won't be. But that was the decision that we made, which Mr. Cato is implementing.
Mr. Chairman,
Mayor Yule.
I just want to comment for the record, and I will be leaving to go to take care of business in my city, and then returning for the executive session. But just for public comment, I personally do not like the process. The budget should be released publicly in front of everyone, not an executive session to the board and then to the public. I've never been part of a process where a budget is delivered in private and executive session, so I just think it's the wrong format, despite who made the call, but certainly wasn't the decision of this body. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mrs. Hutchins?
I'm sorry, I have to echo the same comment, but more importantly, that I thought this board asked to have the budget presented in public, and that that should be the decision of the board. But more importantly, I expect this to be the general manager's budget to the public and the board, and we as a board can dispose of it in any manner that we wish. We will have opportunity for public comment, and that should be incorporated in the decision making that will go on as we move to approval of the budget. But the budget, my expectation, would be presented as a public document. I don't even know how we follow the guidelines of it being an executive session discussion.
Is there further, Mr. Benjamin?
Mr. Chair, the proposal that will be given to us is the general manager's proposal. It is something that we as the board will receive. It is something that we will then have the opportunity to review and act upon, and if there are portions of it that need to go to public hearing, that will also happen. But it is, in fact, the general manager's budget and entirely his, and I have no problem with it being handed out at this moment.
Okay, well, I don't think there's any issue regarding this. I think it was more an issue of of the agenda and so forth. But let's proceed to release the budget, and we will proceed with our agenda. We now move to the report by Planning, Development, and Real Estate, Mr. Albert.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. There are two items for action on the Planning, Development, and Real Estate Committee. The first is the sale of excess property at 6th Street and Puerto Rico Avenue Northeast to the Capital Era Food Bank. This is property that is no longer needed by Metro WMATA and will be sold for $170,000. I move approval of this action.
It's been moved. Is there a second? It's been moved by Mr. Albert and seconded by Mr. Downey. Thank you. Mr. Albert?
Our second item is the time extension. Before I move on to the second item, Mr. Chair, to re-vote on this?
Yes.
discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. It is approved.
Thank you, Mr. Albert. Thank you, sir. So our second item is the approval of a time extension for negotiating an amended term sheet for the lease of Shaw Howard University Florida Avenue Joint Development Site. And this extension is to be brought back to the board by March 31st, 2010. I move approval of this action.
It's been moved. Is there a second? It's been seconded by Mrs. Hutchins. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Please record me as abstaining on that vote.
This concludes my report, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Albert. We now proceed to Mr. Benjamin and his report by Finance, Administration, and Oversight.
Mr. Chairman, we have, and members of the board, we have three items before us. The first is approval for two Alexandria reimbursable projects. A reimbursable project is one in which the local jurisdiction pays the amount. In this particular case, it would be the city of Alexandria. The first project is for Eisenhower Avenue, where there is work going on to put in a second entrance. And the second one is for King Street, where we would reconfigure the bus loop and the Kiss and Ride. The first project is $1.8 million. The second project is $4.2 million. We would also be amending the reimbursable budget, overall projects budget, from $35.9 million to $41.9 million. And we would authorize the staff to negotiate and the general manager to execute a reimbursable agreement with the City of Alexandria. Also, there are some tasks that we would be authorizing for a consultant to carry out some technical support. It's all in front of you. I move this item.
It's the Alexandria reimbursable projects has been moved. It has been seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. Mr. Benjamin.
Mr. Chair, the second project is the Dulles Metro Rail Phase 2 reimbursable agreement. This is a reimbursable agreement with the Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority, and it's for Phase 2 preliminary engineering. This is the second part that actually goes out to the airport, and it would be the role that Washington Metro plays in reviewing the engineering process as it moves forward. And one of the things I had asked for was a statement as to exactly what responsibilities and authorities our engineers have as we review the preliminary engineering activities that are carried out by the Airports Authority. Mr. General Manager, could you tell us what responsibilities and authorities we have and what happens if there are any differences of opinion?
Is there a motion? Did you move?
No, I did not move yet.
We're working underneath the guidelines of exactly what we did on Phase 1, where we have our design criteria. We review what is being proposed to us operationally and from an engineering perspective on what we will be receiving from this effort for Phase 2.
And we are trying to make sure that the design meets and the engineering meets our guidelines and our standards?
Yes.
And if there's a difference opinion between us and the engineers, then what happens? The engineers who are doing the work?
It goes through an escalation process where myself and the project lead for MWIL would meet to try to resolve it at that level. If it's not attainable, then the general manager would become involved. If it cannot be resolved, then it would come back to the board.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to be clear that what is going on here is it's our review in order to make sure that it meets our standards and becomes an operational system when eventually we have to operate it, correct?
Operate and maintain.
Operate and maintain. Thank you, sir.
Benjamin, could I ask a question?
Mr. Downey?
As I understand this, it's the first time I've really seen it, this will be payments that are made by MWA to WMATA for work done by WMATA staff?
Yes.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure I didn't have a potential conflict here.
Okay, moving ahead, this action would authorize the general manager to negotiate and execute the project agreement with the Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority for the Phase 2 Preliminary Engineering Overview and establish a reimbursable project for Phase 2 for the Metrorail extension to Dulles Airport. The initial project budget for this is $3.5 million, contingent upon execution of a satisfactory agreement. I move approval.
It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin, seconded by Mrs. Hutchins. This is the Dulles Metrorail Phase 2 actions. Is there discussion? 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 Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. And this action is approved. Mr. Benjamin.
Our third and final action coming from the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee is Cinderbed Road Agreements. This is a new bus garage that we have the opportunity to build at Cinderbed Road. And this is a real opportunity for us to build a new and better bus garage to replace some very old ones. The action involves authorizing the general manager to sign a master development agreement for exclusivity to be awarded to CBR LLC for fee arrangements and provisions for land acquisition and pre-site acquisition activities. It also authorizes the transfer of $2 million from the proceeds from the sale of the Arlington Bus Garage, for which the total is $12 million, to the Cinderbed Road project to fund land activities up to the closing on the land. I move approval.
It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin and seconded by Mr. McKay. Is there discussion, discussion, discussion? The District of Columbia would like to raise a question insofar as greater details on the accounting of the proceeds of the sale of the Arlington Garage and the Royal Street Garage. Are we able to request that information from you, Mr. Cato? You may submit it after the meeting.
Yes. Yes, we can submit an accounting of all the dollars from the sale and the use of those dollars. And what,
thank you. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. And the Cinder Bed Road Agreement is approved. We now proceed to the discussion of closing the $40 million FY10 gap. Let me introduce this topic by saying that we had a special meeting of the Board of Directors on January the 7th, at which time, after considerable discussion, this board agreed to submit to the public for comment four proposals, which the general manager will soon explain to us again. But the four proposals involved various options relating to preventative maintenance, to increasing fares by 5 cents, to increasing fares by 10 cents, and by reducing various services on bus and rail. These proposals authorized for public comment by this board were the subject of discussion over the last 2 weeks. We held a public hearing on January the 27th, which was last night, and we've had a total of 684 people provide input on these measures, either by testifying at a public hearing or submitting their comments in writing. But in addition to that, There were, I believe, 80-some witnesses who actually testified last evening, many of them in this very room. And I chaired one of the hearing sessions. Our vice chair, Mr. Benjamin, chaired another hearing session. And so that we had quite a lot of people come out in addition to those who actually testified. And in fact, both of these rooms, this room and the committee room, were filled to overflowing. And there was a third room where people were able to await the opportunity to testify and they could view the proceedings. The results have been the subject of publicity. They're also a subject of report, which you have, staff report on public hearings on proposed measures to bridge the FY10 year-end budgeted deficit. And that report was prepared very rapidly, and I do want to pause right now and thank our staff, because everyone who was involved in the hearing last night, we commend you, because it moved very, very smoothly. There were hundreds of people at the authority here, and everything moved, I think, in a very, very good fashion. And we commend you for your work. And Loida Segura, I would like to single you out, if I may. You shouldn't do this, I know, but I'm going to do it anyway, because you really put a lot of effort into this. And all of your staff, and Mr. Cato, your staff, who made this such a successful event. And then to get this report, you know, the very next day, you know, is impressive. And so you can review this report, and that will tell you where we are on this issue. Now, before I proceed to the general manager, and I also want to now compliment our general counsel, our counsel to the authority, Carol O'Keefe, because she's thought a lot about this. And she has in our binder today various possible scenarios as reflected in resolutions which she and her staff have drafted, and so that we are prepared to adopt something and then have the documents in front of us. But let me state a word of caution, or a special note, is it may be necessary, depending upon the outcome of this discussion, for us to put this matter aside for a matter of minutes, so that the final resolution, which I think every member of this board should see before the final vote, can be presented to us. It may not be necessary, but it may be necessary. So we want to keep that in mind. Am I right, Ms. O'Keefe? Because you may have to fill in some blanks, and there may be other work which is necessary. So with that as an introduction to this important issue, let me now call upon the general manager, who is going to give us all a hopefully not too lengthy refresher on what the options were that were presented. Mr. Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, and I'm trying to see if the slide will come up on the screen. Doesn't seem to be working right now, so let me move forward. You really address a lot of the key points I was going to mention. 684 people submitted comments. 88 people testified last night. 596 people provided written testimony. Again, we broke it down into the various jurisdictions. People from each jurisdiction testified, from Maryland 24%, from the Commonwealth of Virginia 19%, the District of Columbia. He's waiting for the slide to come back up again. But I think, given the time, I will move. The District of Columbia, 29, undisclosed jurisdictions, 28%. 55.7% of the people, based upon their comments, generally supported a fare increase. 54.6% were opposed to any service reductions. There were four different options, and let me give you those options very quickly. The first option, of course, staff recommended we could close $24.1 million of the $40 million projected gap through various measures, which it goes across all four options. The first option that we proposed to the public, that we would close the additional remaining $16 million, would be $12 million of capital funds to capitalize parts and preventative maintenance. And I want to make something clear because I've heard different statements on this. This is to, we're doing the work, but we're doing the work with capital dollars versus operating dollars if this option was approved. In addition, $4 million in reduced bus and rail services. Option two was $16 million in capitalization of parts and preventative maintenance to close the gap. Option three was $11.2 million in capitalization of parts and preventative maintenance and $4.8 million in a 5 cents fare increase. Option three, four rather, was $6.4 million in capitalization of parts and preventative maintenance and approximately $9.6 million and a 10 cents fare increase. The support from the options, less than 1% for option one, less than 1% for option two, 3.5% for option three, 21.2% for option four, and then there was a various inputs of other methods to close the gap. Support for using capital to close the gap was 18.2%. Opposition to using any capital of those who express comments was 6.2%. Opposing to changing rail headways or shortening trains was 15.9%. Opposition to reducing rail service hours, 17.8%. Opposition to closing certain rail station mezzanines, 8%. Opposition to changing bus headways, 5%. And opposition to reducing the number of bus stops, 2.6%. There was also speculation that proposed modifications to services would cause people to abandon Metro, and that was expressed by 17.5% of those people who submitted comments. We've also done a preliminary Title VI analysis of all the service changes and fare increase options, and upon approval of the board, we will finalize that analysis. But basically, in looking at the Title VI requirements themselves, if there are any disparate impacts, an agency that feels that the lack of doing a fare increase would have a greater impact on the region can override any of those impacts. But again, we're not sure if there's any impacts until the final decision is made. Mr. Chairman, that really is the, what occurred last night. It was a great deal of input. And I thought the comments from the public were well thought out and an expression of their feelings that they were able to articulate very clearly to us, which made it easier of the hard task that staff had last night of putting this together. So very briefly, that's the input from the public of the various options that we propose.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cato. Is there discussion on the options that are before us? Mr. Zimmerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a tough problem to resolve today. But I think it's important that we remember that the budget problem that we have is not one, but three. And after today, if we resolve this one, the two that remain are far larger. The second one, of course, is that we must immediately turn our attention to the FY 2011 budget, which has just been placed in front of us, and which I notice, if I read correctly, now projects an operating budget gap for next year of close to, was it $189 million?
That's correct.
So that's an order of magnitude 4 to 5 times the size of what we're dealing with today. And, of course, the far larger budget problem is the out-year problem, the one related to the long-term investment in this system, for which the staff and manager have already identified a need of about $11.4 billion over a decade, for which we optimistically might have $8 billion,
yes.
Which is to say, optimistically, we may be short $3 billion. So we have significant problems that we're going to have to deal. And it's sad to say, this item before us today, on which 88 people spoke last night and in which hundreds have commented, is the least of them. but we have to deal with it first, and we have to deal with it in a manner that reflects our understanding of what comes after. I don't think it is an exaggeration to say, as a number of people who testified last night did, that we are peering into the death spiral that a former general manager warned of some years ago. If we begin eroding the service further, we will likely see further erosion of ridership, and that will lead to further declines in revenue, which will have people proposing further declines in service and so on. And that is the spiral that unfortunately is much of the history of transit in this country prior to the last decade or two. We've succeeded here in Washington in this area over the last several decades in creating something new and ratcheting transit usage up to unprecedented levels. And it's because of that that we now face this problem, because we have created a system that people in this region are dependent on. As many speakers said last night, this region could not function without it. But we have not committed the resources on an ongoing basis necessary to maintain it at the level of service that people expect. I heard several things very clearly last night, and I've heard them in the messages that people have sent that have written over the last few weeks, and I hear them when I wait at the bus stop, and I hear them when I'm on the trains. Number one is protect the service. Over and over, people said last night, and people have said to me continuously, we cannot have a decline or degradation in the quality of service. Secondly, I heard an awful lot of people clearly recognize that the capital fund in this agency is about the future service. It's about service continuing to work, and it's about safety. And they've said over and over again, don't raid capital. Also heard a lot of people say, we need a higher level of support from the region and from all levels of government because the region depends on it. And I agree with them there also. And I heard a lot of people say, as you saw in the numbers, that while increasing fares is never desirable and none of us would like to do that, that's better than cutting the service or degrading the future condition by raiding the capital. So I think we need an approach that recognizes those values, because I think those are the ones that, for the most part, we share, and I think they're sensible. And I think we need to do that, again, recognizing that whatever we do today, we're going to have to turn around and deal with tomorrow. And many of these measures, these are just measures to get us through June. This is just about now until June 30. But many of those problems come back on July 1, and we're going to have to deal with them between now and then. And for that reason, Mr. Chairman, and I'll just go ahead and tell you where I am. Number one, I have to reject all the proposed service cuts that were put forward. On the broad principle that this region needs more transit, not less, it is demanding more of it, and even the decline in ridership that's been talked about is really a very slight decline. It has a significant impact, but again, out of a $1.4 billion operating budget, we've had a $40 million, we have a $40 million problem. That's just a small percentage. We still have ridership far beyond the levels that were achieved for years and years and years. It's still at overall historic highs. And as the economy recovers, and I believe it will, the needs are going to be greater. I also think that the specific kinds of service cuts that were proposed point to the dangers. We heard from many people about them, and particularly some of those who are dependent on bus service, I thought were most compelling last night, like the gentleman from Prince George's, I think Mr. Ryerson, I believe it was, who talked about not having a car and being dependent, and he can't get anywhere if he doesn't have a bus. And then we heard other people talk about how the fact that in much of that county, a bus service might be once 30 minutes or less, even 60 minutes, which is a very difficult situation. What struck me was that the proposals for cutting bus service focused on some of the most successful routes, routes where we've shown if you increase the service, you get big increases in ridership. And to cut service on routes in which we have growing ridership doesn't make any sense either. So even if we were to look at service cuts, I think we'd have to look much more carefully at how we do them. But I don't think we should do them today. Secondly, I think it is essential that we minimize any reduction of capital and maintenance. And if it were to take anything at all in order to get through this year, then it should be clear that it is merely a deferral from, say, February to July, and that anything we're going to do, if we have to do any at all, is something that immediately shows up in our discussion in 2011, so that it is no more than a matter of months that we're talking about. But I would hope we could keep that to a bare minimum. So what I suggest, Mr. Chairman, is that we do the following, that we accept certain of the general manager's recommendations in the original proposal, which are to say the red line insurance, which I believe was about six, the usage of $10 million of Recovery Act funds. I believe there was $2 million administrative reductions. And those are all as in the original proposal and are pretty much carried in all the options that people saw. The rest of what I'm going to propose is essentially consistent with option four as it was described. That is that we impose for the remainder of the year, that is till June 30th, a 10-cent surcharge as advertised on fares, which we're told will raise about 10. And then for what remains, I would ask that the staff speak to the potential for some further reductions in cost that would not affect service and would not come from capital. We're down to a matter of a few million. It seems like there would be a good potential to do that within a $1.4 billion budget. And that the operating reserve, which was also cited in the original proposal, be drawn as necessary, but only as necessary. That's the general outline. Perhaps I could ask Ms. Kissel to comment on the proposal. I'll hold it.
If the board is mandating that we reduce our spending for the second half of this year by $6 million, I think is the amount, then we will implement that immediately. It will have some impact to our operating projects, not service-related, and we will actually provide an assessment and a list of what those are. But they will affect primarily contracting services of projects that we fund with operating dollars, and we can provide you that list, but we'll implement that.
What I had in mind, Mr. Chairman, was that in fact if we follow this approach, that we would get immediately a specific list, it would be monitored, and we would be able to see if there's anything adverse about any of those measures and take other steps if necessary.
We can provide that list by next week to the board.
Mr. Zimmerman, do you have a motion?
I am prepared to make a motion, yes.
All right, will you make your motion, please?
All right, there is a draft resolution that has been distributed to us that says subject FY 2010 fare increase and service reductions. It under the resolve clauses, there are about nine provisions. This is sort of a mix and match. So
is this the most recent document?
This is the most recent one, the one that was just distributed to us this morning at the desk. I'll walk through this, what I think it is, and then I'll ask for staff to verify that I'm doing what I said I did. I believe that I would include item one, as included there on the page in brackets, which is the fare. Is that right? Let's see. Yeah. Items two, three, and four, I would remove. Two is the service reductions for Metrorail. Three are the headway changes, and four are changes in bus routes. So I would delete all of those.
Let's see, what are you deleting? Your
items two, three, and four.
But you're keeping number one?
I believe I'm keeping number one. When I'm done with this, we'll come back and see, right? But I think one needs to be in there. And then number five, which will become two, obviously, speaks to the Recovery Act funds, and I would put 10 as the number, the maximum we can use, in the blank there. I skip over six, and in number seven, which has to do with the insurance settlement, I'd put in the number six there. And I believe eight and nine would stay, and I believe nine is the wording that corresponds to what I was trying to describe. So I'm going to again ask staff to check and counsel as well. I believe what I'm trying to include in this is items one, five, seven, eight, and nine.
Mr. Zimmerman, you also mentioned including in the resolution the $2 million of administrative cost reductions that had been previously proposed. as well as drawing upon the reserve as necessary.
Yeah, and then why is there some reason the administrative matter, which was on the general matters table, wasn't in this resolution?
The thought was to include things that required specific authority today, but I'll include it in the resolution.
Okay, so if you're suggesting we should have another clause that says what you just described, that's
I'll put it in, yes.
Okay, so we have item one, we strike what were 2, 3, 4, and 5. I'm sorry, 2, 3, and 4. 5 becomes 2. We strike 6. We include 7 becomes 3, 8 becomes 4, 9 becomes 5, and you have an additional one.
Yes.
Do you want to read that?
That the board approves the utilization of $2 million reduction of administrative costs and also the use of the reserve as needed.
With that, I move that resolution, Mr. Chairman.
All right, let me, as the chair, let me be clear about it. It's been moved by Mr. Zimmerman, seconded by Mrs. Hutchins. Let me restate what I'm hearing, is that under the resolve, the first resolve clause is maintained, and that first resolve clause sets up the time period for the surcharge.
Item one, yes.
Number one. We would delete number 2, number 3, and number 4.
Yes.
We would maintain number 5.
With the number 10 inserted in the blank.
With the number 10 inserted in the blank. Well, actually, it would be 10 million.
10 million.
Right. We would, what happens to number 6?
I believe number 6 goes away.
Well, you are the maker of the motion, Mr. Zimmerman.
Yes, and since I got confirmation that that language reflects what I intended to remove, then I guess it does go away.
Okay. So number 6 would go away. Number 7?
Is included with the number 6 million included in the blank.
And number 8?
Included.
And number 9?
Included. And then an additional clause that Ms. O'Keefe has prepared.
State the additional clause, please, which will be a new number.
That the board approves the proposed reductions of $2 million in administrative costs and also authorizes the use of the reserve as needed.
And reserve as needed. And that is already present in the general manager's general options for filling the gap, right?
That's okay. Correct.
I just want to make sure. Is everybody clear on the Zimmerman motion?
Sure.
Are there any questions just about the motion?
Yes.
Mr. Giancola.
The motion refers to an appendix. Appendix has two options listed in it. Do we need to separate out that? I mean, I'm a little confused. There's an appendix A and B. I think A refers to both of them, the 10-cent and the 5-cent options.
Where is the reference to appendix, please?
Attachment A.
There are two attachments, one for 5 cents and one for 10. The 10-cent across the board increase is first in your package, I believe.
So that would be the attachment A.
Yes.
Actually,
that is in
per Mr. Zimmerman's motion.
Mr. Chairman? Yes. I think Mr. Giancola has actually found a problem because the 5-cent one is also listed as attachment A, which I think he's correct about. So I you know, if we need to clarify that, then with whatever language, I did mean the 10-cent option.
Right, and that's the attachment that will be with the resolution.
Okay, as long as that's understood, because that is currently described. Both options
I understand
attachment
that.
A. So if it's understood that that's my motion to include the 10-cent option.
Now,
thank you.
Before we proceed to debate, I just want to know if there are any further clarifications. Mr. Giancola had a clarification, an important one. Are there other clarifications, Mr. Albert?
Yes, I just want to clarify whether or not we are adding an additional clause to authorize the use of the reserves, or are we adding it onto Article 9.
It can all be in one or it can be separate. I probably would have put it separately.
Yeah, I think separately, just to make it clear. And is there a target we're looking for in terms of use of the reserves?
The language was as needed.
The language in the original general manager proposal was this.
Right.
You know, the reserves currently is at 5.6 million. That's the balance. So as needed, we would potentially could use the whole amount.
Got you. Thanks for clarification.
Mr. Benjamin, clarification.
I would just note that we don't really need that because already the reserves automatically get applied when we get to the end of the fiscal year. But if we're going to do it, could we clarify that this is the operating reserve?
Thank you. Mr. Downey.
Question on fares. If a surcharge is imposed of 10 cents on the base fare and a surcharge of 10 cents on the senior fare, is this written in a way that still keeps us in compliance for half fares for seniors?
Yes.
Okay. And I'll ask you later how.
Okay. If you'll look on at page 2 of the first attachment A, it addresses the increase to senior and disabled Metro bus fares.
And what would that be?
So that is intended to keep within the amount, the allowable amount under the law.
All right. I have a clarification. Wait, let's just wait. Is there any other, I saw another hand. Now, is there anyone else with clarification before we proceed to debate? Mr. Zimmerman?
Yes, I actually would like a clarification on what had been identified as item 8 and presumably would be renumbered as item 4. Again, I just kept that because I assumed it was capturing some of what was in the proposal, but could we have clarification on why that language is needed about transfers?
I'll do my best. I'm hoping Mr. Hughes is here to back me up. The tariff specifically addresses the amount allocated for transfers from the various local bus regions, and unless we put this language in there, there's a problem with our tariff. So that's intended to simply clarify the value that will be given for transfer from the regional bus services.
But that's already in place. Does this arise simply because we're making a change?
Yes.
I see. So it has to, basically that has to accompany the fare.
Yes.
Probably it ought to be adjacent to the one on fares. Realize that's just a matter of form, but
make it number 2 is what you're saying.
I would think they should be ordered in a way that's, you know, all right, easy
that's
to comprehend.
Very good. Is everyone now clear on the motion before us?
I'm not.
Is everyone on the board clear about the motion before us? Okay. Now we proceed to debate on the motion. Is there discussion? Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Mrs. Hutchins.
Mr. Chairman, in seconding Mr. Zimmerman's motion, I think that, as he expressed, we're at some extremely difficult times. And as I listened to the public hearing yesterday, last night, I would bring the conversation to a point where we heard from a lot of folks, if I were a business, to say they love our product, they need our product. And the decline or erosion to that would have them leaving the system, and that they are willing to, one, pay for the continuation, look to the improvements and the safety of that system, that it is really the very important instrument that holds this region together. And so while, and I think it's so important that we stress to the community that this is the 2010 budget, that our actions that we do here move forward into what we may face as the 2011 budget. Therefore, the increase in the fare not only gives us an opportunity to address the deficit that's there, but it also gives us a basis that I think is a more secure means of moving to a 2011 budget. The intention of trying to maintain the revenue that it takes to provide the quality of service that is needed in this system. I think the other part that is a party to this motion that's so important, and it's something I always say, if we talk clearly enough about what our system and our budget and our operations about, our public starts to understand it. And we heard over and over last night that people understand the basic fundamentals of budgeting. If you erode your capital, you will tend to continue to make that a habit, and you'll never be able to get back to the basis under which you need and must operate our system. And they said it over and over. So I think this gives us a better foundation on which to make these changes and address the short-term issues, and that serves much better in terms of us moving toward addressing and beginning to look what we can do in the 2011 budget. So I'm pleased to support it, and I hope that we will have an opportunity to continue the kinds of discussions we brought to our public last night. The discussions are helpful. The discussions are also the things that if we're customer-focused, we need to have and have our public to understand what the operation of the system is about, but more importantly, understand what their needs and requirements are.
Thank you, Mrs. Hutchins. Is there further discussion? Ms. Hewlett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'd like to commend Mr. Zimmerman on this motion. It's clear that he, like the rest of us, listened to our customers. They analyzed the options that were before them, and we heard over and over and over again that they were opposed to the service cuts. And I have to particularly address the folks in Prince George's County, Maryland, because the headways there are, in some cases, a little bit too long anyway. And in some cases, the bus stops are too far apart anyway. So I am, those situations would be very, service cuts would be untenable there, as they are in most places. So we heard over and over again that they were opposed to that and opposed to the use of the capital funds, because it's a downward spiral there as well. So most of the people did talk about the fare increases, and some of it was painful to listen to, but that's, we are trying to be customer service oriented, and it was important for us to hear from our customers. And while they did say they would prefer a fare increase, they said, you know, the corollary to that is that we have to improve customer service. That's a commitment that I think we're trying to make and that we're willing to make here. But nevertheless, they did say that they would prefer that fare increase and the 10-cent fare increase. So I listened, and that was the overwhelming majority of folks. And I think that is the most prudent way to go fiscally and in protecting our customers so that they can still have the ability to get to work and to get wherever it is that they need to go without that loss of service. So I commend Mr. Zimmerman on that motion, and I intend to fully support it.
Mr. Benjamin?
I would like to join Ms. Hutchins and Ms. Hewlett in commending Mr. Zimmerman. That was not only an excellent motion, but I think an extremely good explanation of the issues that are before us and how we have to deal with them. I'm quite impressed, and I'd like to associate myself with his remarks. None of us, not a single member of this board, wants to increase fares. Not a single member of this board wants to decrease service. We are faced with an extremely difficult financial problem, and we will have to do one or the other, and we heard from our customers that they would prefer a fare increase to a service reduction. It's a very thoughtful conclusion, a very good conclusion. The thing that amazed me was the number of people who got up and understood that by borrowing from our capital program, we were in fact potentially hurting service in the future. That tells us something about the people who ride our system, how well they understand the process that's necessary for us to continue to maintain the quality of what we have in infrastructure, in our equipment, and they are urging us to provide them the service not only today, but tomorrow and the years after. I also intend to vote for the motion as made.
Thank you very much. Let me take my turn at this. I was very impressed by the testimony that we heard yesterday. And I, as I said earlier, I'm very impressed by the summary that was provided to us. I think that it, for some people, you know, it was difficult to understand. And there was evidence of confusion in this regard. to understand a proposal that would use capital funds to cover preventative maintenance. And so some witnesses were saying, don't cut preventative maintenance. But cutting preventative maintenance was never an option that was put before us. And, you know, and so there was some confusion over this. I do note that in the report that we received this morning, the support for using Metro's capital funds sparingly to close the gap got the support of 18%, 18% of those testifying. On the other hand, those who specifically stated an opinion on increasing fares from 5 to 10 cents got 5.1%. There was 55% who evidenced some general support for increasing fares. So 18% were willing to sparingly use the capital funds to use preventative maintenance. There's hundreds of millions of dollars in the Metro budget today that is classified or could be classified as preventative maintenance. And as a matter of budgeting principles and accounting principles, preventative maintenance can be used, I mean, capital dollars can be used for it, to pay for it, and operational dollars can be used for it. The fact of the matter is that in jurisdiction after jurisdiction, let me cite the state of Maryland as an outstanding example of this. Capital dollars have been used last year. Capital dollars will probably be used this year to cover what would otherwise be great budget gaps. So I think we all agree, and everybody here last night, you know, perhaps not surprisingly said, don't cut my services. Whatever it is, don't cut it. But then we are left with the dilemma of how do we fill this gap if we maintain all of the services that we have today. Let me say that I can look down this track, and we can all look down this track, and we see this $190 million gap coming at us. And there is not going to be enough money, as Mr. Cato has said many times, there's not going to be enough revenue from fare increases to cover $190 million. We're going to have to look to a combination of strategies, more money from the jurisdictions, possible service reductions, use of capital funds, and fare increases to make up for this gap, assuming that it actually comes to pass. But in the interest of setting forth some facts about our capital budget, let me ask the general manager, what is the FY10, this fiscal year, authorized spending in capital?
$623 million.
So let's keep this in mind, that in the past, I'm just going to use the past 4 years, we've had capital budgets of $763 million, $673 million, $617 million, $623 million. In separate capital budgets, we have had that amount. Let me ask this question to Mr. Cato. What do you project as the amount of capital spending which we will not use in this fiscal year?
We're assuming that we're going to obligate and spend about 80% of the funds.
So put differently, 20% of, let me call it, authorized capital spending will not be used in this fiscal year.
Will that be obligated or spent in this year, which, yes, you're all
okay,
to
will
the
not
next
be,
year.
That's, let's be technical. Will not be obligated or spent in this fiscal year. Does that amount exceed $16 million?
Yes, it does.
How much is the amount that will be left on the table unspent in this fiscal year?
About $124 million.
$124 million. So I think it is in this context that we have to examine, you know, the statements that are made and quite frankly, the impression that has been given that we are somehow mortgaging our future, that we are somehow jeopardizing safety, that we are somehow jeopardizing maintenance of our system. Because the fact of the matter is, as you have just said, Mr. Cato, is that over $100 million will be left on the table in terms of capital spending. Am
Mr.
I right?
Chair, if I could clarify your statement. I didn't say it would be left on the table. We were not committed this year.
Correct.
The capital budget is a specified amount of monies, and we have projects that those dollars are assigned to. So while the expenditure and the obligation will not occur in this budget year. We will obligate those dollars for the same projects. We've not changed the number of projects nor the cost of those projects. It's just the ability to assign a vendor or to issue the procurement of those specific items or projects. But next year, the projects will still be there.
Right.
The projects do not go away.
But that would be more impactful to my mind if this was an exceptional year. But the fact of the matter, and I want to commend Metro staff, because we're doing a much better job of spending our capital dollars now than we used to. Because as one member of this board, I expressed great concern years ago when I saw the very, very low spending of capital dollars. But the fact of the matter is that in virtually every year of this decade, we have not spent to the level that we could have spent, or we have not obligated to the level that we could have spent. So this has been a continuing situation. Why am I saying this? I'm saying this because when you examine $16 million in capital spending in this context, it begins to approach what 18% of the people who have registered an opinion said that they supported using capital funds sparingly. Sparingly. Now, let me just conclude by saying this. If we use the capital funds sparingly, as 18% of our respondents said they would like to see happen, there would be no fare increase. There would be no fare increase. And I think that in turn would spare a lot of people. And I just want to say this in conclusion, and I don't have a category on this, but I heard more than 50 witnesses last night. I sat in this seat and I heard them. And many of the witnesses that came forward, such as Kathy Henderson from the District of Columbia, emphasized the impact on poor people. They emphasized, and this was also witnesses from Prince George's County. Ms. Hewlett, you sat next to me. And this is something that's of concern to every member of this board, that those who are having a hard time making ends meet, those who are probably involved on the margins in terms of the loss of revenue from ridership, are going to be hard hit by this. And so I appreciate the amount of revenue that's going to be raised by fares, but I at least wanted to describe the situation insofar as using a portion of the capital budget, which would be permissible to fund preventative maintenance, not reduce preventative maintenance, to fund it to maintain at our levels. And that we could do to the tune of $16 million. We could do it to a lesser amount. Mr. Downey.
I want to support the motion as Mr. Zimmerman has presented it and offer a couple of comments. From, unfortunately, not on the basis of the hearing last night. I had a commitment out of town, but I certainly appreciate the staff summary of it to understand what was said. None of these are really good options. That's what public life is about, is choosing among bad options. Fare increases will bring pain, but it'll be my view and experiences. It's sharp pain. It begins to go away over time if service is good, if the system continues to operate. And it's a sharing across all the users of the system. Service cuts, unless one finds a route that no one rides, have to affect certain individuals, or if they are hours of service reduction, they're really negatively affecting the entire system. So those are painful. But I have to say, for me at least, foregoing true capital investment in order to pay for necessary preventative maintenance, and that is what we would be doing, is a very, very slippery slope. And in another life, I joined a transit system that had been going down that cycle for a long time, and it took almost forever to get back up. It's a process that's a little bit this year, and then you double down next year to do it, and then you double down again, and pretty soon all of your opportunity to invest capital simply to sustain the system that we have will go away. To me, it's like getting in the bathtub and slitting your wrists. It doesn't hurt, but you're dead when it's finished. So I strongly support the package that's been put together. I think it has the right mix. I do want to throw out one other observation just to potentially confuse the issue a bit, but I watched the State of the Union last night. The President did propose a new jobs bill. I saw standing ovations on both sides of the aisle. So there's some potential that that could happen. And at least the House version that they had passed of the jobs bill would bring more transit money and would allocate some portion of that transit money to operating assistance, recognizing that systems that are across the country are in this pain of lowered revenue because of lowered employment and the like need some relief. So I certainly would like to hold open. I would think this needs to be done now because you have to have a budget that makes sense, but hold open if that bill passes in the very near future to reconsider the action and see if those additional operating dollars could be put towards solving this problem.
Mr. Lenton?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I too would like to say
Mr. Lenton. Mr. Lenton, please.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman, I too would like to associate myself with the motion and comments that were made by Mr. Zimmerman. I want to say a couple things. One that clearly we heard from our riders last night, and clearly they recognize, as many have said, the value of our service, and they recognize the many challenges that they're confronting right now in this economy, and the one last thing they need is for us to cut off their lifeline to the various things that they still have remaining. But the other thing that I think they also are concerned about and they express pretty clearly is the need for increased confidence in the system and its ability to function. We saw this afternoon or earlier today some rails that are deteriorated in our system that we are in the process of replacing. We have many, many more of those needs. We saw a couple months ago another system that was brought in electrically in one of our circuits that had exceeded its useful life, but we were still using them. That needs to be replaced. That takes away the confidence of our riders in the system that they use if we continue to spend what you know, we talk about preventive capital maintenance as this is something that's just funny money. I will say, and I hate to keep saying this to this group, but I introduced preventive capital maintenance to the Federal Transit Administration, and Mr. Downey was there at the time. So there was no such animal prior to that. And by doing so, one of the concerns that I heard from the Congress over and over again, because they wanted to cap it, was whether or not they could trust the transit agencies to judiciously use the preventive capital maintenance so they wouldn't lead to continued deterioration of the systems. Now, I assured them during that discussion in the Appropriations Committee that transit agencies are well managed, that general managers make good decisions, that they would not give up their future to deal with an emergency that was occurring in front of them today, that we think long terms in terms of the needs of our system and we wouldn't cannibalize them. Well, this is just the discussion about using preventive maintenance to deal with current operating costs is just the kind of fear that the members of Congress had. It's also the kind of fear that the people that came before us had. We can't go down that road. We're going to have another situation with the 2011 budget. And I think it's also important for everybody to state that to our riders. Because some riders think that there's some who were here last night who understand that this is to deal with the deficit in the 2010. There are many people who were not here last night who will hear us talking about whatever resolution we have today and think that's done. They don't recognize that shortly after that, we're going to start looking at this, and there may be another challenge that we'll have in front of us in the next couple of months. We do not want to go down that slippery slope of taking our capital dollars. The councilman made reference to the money that appears to be on our books because we didn't obligate funds during the course of the year. That's a spending rate. That is not, that does not mean that those projects still need to be purchased, still need to be occurring. It just means that if we start using for capital, preventive capital maintenance, those dollars will not be there to buy those new rails. It'll be gone. It'll be gone. So there's a difference between money that's available and money that's been dedicated to a capital need that exists. And I think we need to be very clear about that. Thank you very much.
Is there further discussion? Mr. McKay?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also want to thank Mr. Zimmerman for his motion and associate myself with that. But I do want to say the most regrettable thing about last night was that this board presented an election ballot to the people who came in, and we gave them four options to pick from. And what we repeatedly heard was, as my colleague mentioned, none of the options were good options. None of them were good options. And it's regrettable that we left it to them to decide between four things. The good news is our riders are smarter than that. They said they were no good options, and they said do not raid our capital budget. They said raise our fares. And that ultimately is why Mr. Zimmerman had to piece together a motion to put together what we heard last night, which is not one of the four options in exacting detail. It's something different. It's our riders standing up and saying, we don't have confidence in Metro right now, but we'd like to. And the way we get confidence is to improve the experience, improve the customer experience. And that starts with making sure that we don't cut service. And it includes making sure that our system runs efficiently. While we are really thankful for the federal infusion of dollars that's forthcoming, we all know that the $150 million doesn't shake a stick at what we've characterized as urgent capital needs. Not just capital needs, but urgent capital needs to sustain this system. And raiding any capital budget, quite frankly, as has been said, pushes projects down the path. It's not about spending every dollar that you have in a given year. It's about sustaining our dedication to capital improvement, and not doing that pushes projects down the road, puts our system in jeopardy, and causes a loss of confidence among our riders, which we've already been experiencing. The famous phrase of when you're in a hole, stop digging, absolutely applies to us in this circumstance. And for that reason, I will support Mr. Zimmerman's motion. Thank you.
Further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of the amendment say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. And we now proceed to the resolution as amended. Is that... We just had the one vote? Okay, so the resolution is adopted. Thank you all very much.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Zimmerman?
I would like to note, I said earlier that, you know, I heard, and we all heard a lot of people talk about the need for larger commitments. And looking ahead to 2011, I think that it is important that we begin the process of educating folks who need to be in what Mr. Linton was referring to, that this is just, you know, a small first step, but we have a big problem now. And I think that one of the things we need to do is to, in a formal way, make appeal to all those who depend on the system and who fund it, that looking forward to 2011, we need them to consider increasing their contribution to this authority. That's not something that would be... It really wasn't practical for us to even think about for this current year. I mean, we're in fiscal years for all these governments as well, and they're all in holes they're trying to get out of. But they're all formulating their budgets for 2011. Those budgets aren't in great shape either. They're all dealing with challenges. But a lot of speakers said, and they're right, that this is just not another expense. It is something that is one of the fundamental things that people depend on in this region, and it should be thought of that way. And so we need to make sure we're actually, you know, on the agenda when budgets are set in all the places that ultimately provide the subsidy, to think about, well, maybe we should consider. I mean, in our budget, I know there are some things we're going to increase even as we're reducing a budget overall. There are safety net expenditures that have to be made, and they'll go up, not down. And in very many ways, this system is part of that. It is part of what people depend on it.
daily basis, and we need to at least give the option to those governments to increase their contribution. So I would ask that the board direct that a letter at least be prepared for the chairman to sign and submit to the appropriate bodies that would, you know, explain the situation that we're facing, the budget that we're about to deal with, and to make the request that they consider an increase in their contribution. That would, in my mind, be the first step in a dialogue that I hope we could open with others in the region about what the region's commitment ought to be for 2011 and going forward.
Thank you very much. We now proceed to the administrative items. Is there objection to a motion to approve these items in block? It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been seconded by Mr. Albert. Is there discussion, discussion, discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The administrative items are approved. The next order of business is remarks by outgoing chairman. That's me. It was the best of times, and it was the worst of times. Everyone, I am sure, knows those famous words by Charles Dickens, but let me now recall the entire paragraph that he wrote in A Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times, it was the age of wisdom, it was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief, it was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light, it was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope, it was the winter of despair. We had everything before us, we had nothing before us. We were all going directly to heaven, we were all going the other way. First, let me recall the last time I served as chairman of this board. It was 2003, when our greatest challenge that year, many of you will recall this, was a major blizzard. About 16 inches of snow fell, seriously impacting the transit system. Another major blizzard came in 2009 with about the same snowfall, but it was the least of the challenges we would confront. The outlook was bright when my turn came again to serve as chairman of this board in February 2009. Metro had just been praised for successfully moving 1.5 million customers on inauguration day. We would soon be told by the trade association for this industry that we had in John Cato the best transportation manager in the United States. The board was unanimous at that time in its view that Mr. Cato's then soon expiring contract should be renewed. Federal capital money seemed at long last to be within reach. Congress had not appropriated the funding, but at least it had taken a first step by authorizing $1.5 billion in capital funds over a 10-year period. I take pride in the role I played as a D.C. council member to make sure that D.C. was the first jurisdiction to approve the federal proposal and appropriate our $50 million for this purpose. Maryland and Virginia were right behind. These additional funds will make a huge difference. We have long known that the aging infrastructure needed improvements, but we had Metro Matters. We had about $650 million annually for capital, and now to that amount would be hopefully added an additional $300 million in FY10. Other successes quickly followed. Let me just mention a couple of them. Metro was awarded $202 million in economic stimulus funds, which were obligated well ahead of the federal deadline. Metro further expanded the use of eight-car trains, increasing our rail capacity and reducing crowding. We launched NextBus real-time bus arrival technology. In the spring, we added the very popular new Metro Express limited stop route on 16th Street, which joined similarly popular express lines on Georgia Avenue and Pennsylvania Avenue. After decades of delay and logjam, we finally broke ground on the new Southeastern bus garage at the former DC Village site. We are on our way to expanding cell phone service to include all major cell phone carriers in Metro Rail stations, and staff developed the first ever capital needs inventory of more than $11 billion over 10 years, which focused exclusively on safety and customer needs. Of course, there were challenges, even early in the year. We had to deal with an FY10 budget gap that ultimately totaled $29 million, but the gap was closed largely by additional subsidies from member jurisdictions and use of reserve funds. Another challenge, the federal capital dollars had been authorized, but they did not seem to be moving. The president had not included the funding in the budget he presented to Congress in 2009. Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. had acted, but the inaction in Congress worried us all. Then came June 22nd, crash, and everything changed. 9 people dead, including the train operator, scores injured, the most serious train collision in Metro's history. I well remembered the hurried trip to the scene of the accident, the mangled cars, the dashed hopes, the lost lives, the injured people. I remember, was it the second day, directly in front of the crash site, as we were leaving, we were warned that we would pass by the temporary morgue. Nearly aloud, I thought, don't look. Don't look. But then, who knows why, I looked as I walked by. What my eyes saw on those makeshift tables will never be forgotten. From that day forward, it is as if the heavens opened and all manner of woes descended upon us. What a 7-month stretch it became. In separate accidents, 4 Metro employees were killed since the crash. August 9, September 14, and 2 this past Tuesday, January the 26th. 7 other people committed suicide, even while Metro staff worked with national experts on how to prevent such tragedies. June 26, August 12, September 13, September 17, November 16, November 20th, and January 4th. And then there were all the consequences of the crash itself. Manual operation, which was a wise and necessary decision, slowed everything down. Resources and energies were shifted to address safety concerns. This was the proper priority, but there were consequences for our customers and our service quality. And the press hammered away daily, hourly, using information and reports, very often leaked from agency sources. Board members and managers frequently were reading information for the first time along with everyone else. With more than 10,000 employees, Metro takes great pride in the many staff who respond courteously, drive with impeccable safety records, and who care deeply about our customers. But in the months following the crash, the exceptions were more exceptional than ever. Employees who rudely responded to customer inquiries, the distracted driver who drove too fast, and on and on. The National Transportation Safety Board has yet to inform us, as they must, of the, quote, probable cause of the June 22nd collision. They have yet to advise us on what must be fixed, if anything, to avoid other possible future accidents. So this is our true budget wildcard going forward. Probably very substantial costs, which fortunately we will have $300 million in new capital from the jurisdictions and the federal government in this fiscal year. And now on top of all of this, we must find a new general manager. We need an extraordinary person capable of successfully overcoming extraordinary challenges. I was surprised when John Cato announced his unexpected departure. But you know, I ought not to have been. Having witnessed up close all of what he had to absorb, indeed all of what we have all had to absorb in the weeks and months after June 22nd, an able and good man, I believe he was overcome by events beyond his control and ultimately came to the wise realization that he didn't have what was necessary to respond any longer. Through all of this difficulties, our employees continue to work as hard as ever, and we depend upon them more than ever. We honored 85 employees for outstanding work during my term as chairman. Among these were 31 bus operators who had more than 1 million miles without a preventable accident, 12 rail operators who have gone at least 5 years without any safety-related incidents, 28 employees with exceptional customer service records and proactive service safety interventions, and other employees who intervened when individuals intentionally put themselves in harm's way. Of course, most important are the thousands of Metro employees who do their very often challenging jobs with great care and pride day in, day out. These employees and our dedicated riders who have stuck with us through this extremely challenging people are the sources of hope for a better year ahead. I'm also heartened by the arrival of our first two federal board members, who I would like to again welcome. 10 months ago, the Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. legislatures paved the way for this to happen, and I'm now pleased to see the result of this. I hope they will work with us to obtain badly needed federal support for our operational needs, because we need that budget as well. I want to commend, in anticipation of your election, Mr. Benjamin, I think you are the right person for the right time, and I take great satisfaction in your becoming the chairman, because I think you will bring skill and talent to that job. A fellow board member, Chris Zimmerman, has often called Metro the region's success story. In a region with so many competing interests, in Metro we have come together for some 40 years to establish and operate a superb public transportation system. I'm fully confident that this is going to happen in the future. Thank you very much for this opportunity to serve the people of this region. Thank you. Now, we proceed to the election of officers. And and we elect three officers, the chairman, the vice chairman, and the second vice chairman. And for chairman, Ms. Hewlett, would you make a nomination?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your remarks today and your service. I'd like to nominate Peter Benjamin, my Maryland counterpart, as chairman of WMATA Board of Directors. He's exemplified tremendous leadership, commitment, and acumen, and served the people, served the region very, very well in this capacity, particularly as chair of the Finance and Administration and Oversight Committee. I think I couldn't agree with you more. He's the right person at the right time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hewlett. Is there a second? It has been seconded by Mrs. Hudson. Are there further nominations? Are there further nominations? Hearing none, is there objection to closing nominations? Hearing none, nominations are closed. All those in favor of electing Peter Benjamin as chairman of this board, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. Congratulations, Mr. Benjamin. And now for Vice Chairman, Mr. Zimmerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my great pleasure to nominate for Vice Chairman of the Board my Virginia colleague, Supervisor Catherine Hutchins.
Mrs. Hutchins has been nominated as Vice Chairman by Mr. Zimmerman. Is there a second?
I second that
nomination. Mr. Albert has seconded. Is there objection? Are there further nominations? Hearing none. Is there objection to closing nominations? Hearing none. The nominations are closed. All those in favor of Mrs. Hutchins as vice chairman of this board, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. Congratulations, Mrs. Hutchins. I now nominate Mr. Albert as the second vice chairman of the board. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Benjamin has seconded. Are there further nominations? Further nominations? Hearing none. Is there objection to closing nominations? Hearing none, nominations are closed. All those in favor of electing Mr. Albert as second vice chairman, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Congratulations, Mr. Albert. There you go.
Mr. Graham, thank you very much. And I don't believe there's a single member of this board who would have traded places with you over the last year. I think for many of us, seeing the difficulties that you had to face and the leadership you had to show during the last year, many of us said, there but for the grace of God go I, and appreciate the job that you did for us. We have a very special plaque to thank you for the
for the year of leadership. Okay. Thank you very much.
And I would also, I'm going to dispense with any remarks right now given the lateness of the hour and reserve my opportunity to do so next month. But I do want to thank some people who came and are supporting me, came for this election. And in particular, I want to recognize my brother Ron, who came here, and thank him for coming. Also, the Deputy Secretary of the Maryland Department of Transportation, Carol Bartlett. The Chief of Staff of the Maryland Department of Transportation, Leif Dormshow. Is he? He just left. Okay. So much for that one. a former board member, a chair of this board, a chair of APTA, member of the Fairfax Board of Supervisors, Joe Alexander. Joe? Beverly Silverberg, a former assistant general manager here at Metro and the voice of Metro for years. And another person who came but had to leave, Leona Agaritas, who is the executive director of the Golden Triangle Business Improvement District and was also a former assistant general manager of Metro. I really appreciate having friends like that supporting me, and I'm going to really need it during the coming year. We have a couple more actions to take. First of all, we have new board procedures. You've received them. There were a set of comments that Mr. Zimmerman made. You should have received them last night. I've accepted Mr. Zimmerman's comments. Those make some alterations to what was there, and I assume those are in the book at the present time. Is that right? Ms. O'Keefe.
With the exception of the one change to the post-employment restrictions.
That's okay. Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. O'Keefe. I'd like to move that we adopt the new 2010 board procedures. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Zimmerman. All in favor, say aye.
Mr.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman,
I'm sorry.
Does this include the provisions on ethics, standards of conduct?
This does include the standards of conduct.
Let me ask a question.
Mr.
Graham. I just wanted to get one clarification for the record. On page 19, the post-WMATA restrictions, I understand what is being done here, but I just would, and you might want to respond to this, Mr. Cato, Ms. O'Keefe, you might want to respond to this in writing. But I'd like to know how this impacts particularly the District of Columbia members insofar as the operation of 18 U.S.C. 208. And I know I'm advised that 18 U.S.C. 208, which is the federal post-employment restriction, does not apply to Metro WMATA, but it does apply to the D.C. members. So I just want to, since this language is different from 18 U.S.C. 208, I would just like to have some written clarification of this for the district.
Ms. O'Keefe, do you want to give us oral clarification at this point?
just like to ask Mr. Graham, the section of the United States Code that you have mentioned today and before is actually the fundamental prohibition on conflicts of interest. It does not directly apply to post-employment restrictions. Would you like to have me look at the post-employment restrictions provision?
I have somewhat of an experience here because I actually worked on these provisions when I was a member of the U.S. Senate staff when they were enacted. And my recollection is 18 U.S.C. 208 is the post-employment. 18 U.S.C. 207 is the general. But it's maybe they've changed the code citation. But this is what I remember it to be. But in any event, whatever the post-employment, the federal post-employment restrictions are related, which do apply, you've advised us, to the D.C. members,
yes,
but not to others, how all of this, I just don't want these waters to be anything less than very clear. And if you have two separate provisions with separate wording applying to post-employment restrictions, I'm concerned about that.
I believe they apply to the D.C. board members in their capacity as D.C. board members,
right,
not necessarily in their capacity as WMATA board members. But if that's what you'd like me to take a look at, I will do so.
Right.
And compare the actual post-employment sections.
Well, actually, they apply. I'm here as, and all of the D.C. members are here as D.C. officials.
Yes.
And so our participation in Metro WMATA is, I believe, is actually governed by the federal post-employment restrictions. So anyway, it's just something that, as we change the wording further, that I'd like to have the clarification on.
I'll certainly provide that, Mr. Graham.
And I will support this, Mr. Benjamin, today with that as a qualification until I can figure out what's going on.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. Yes, certainly all of these procedures are ones that we are going to use, subject to the board at any point deciding that they want to change those procedures. And I'll be open to those suggestions at any point. Are there any other comments or questions? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Our next action is approval of committee assignments. Those are before you. They also include the two new federal members of the board. I move approval of the committee assignments. Is there a second? Second, Ms. Hutchins. Thank you. Any comments, questions? If not,
I have a question. Whoop,
Mr. Graham.
Yeah, this is on behalf of the District of Columbia. Could we have a clarification as to where oversight of the capital budget responsibility lies in which committee?
Oversight of the ongoing capital budget lies within finance and administration.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Reports for D.C., Mr. Albert.
No reports in D.C.
From Washington Suburban Transit Commission, Mr. Solomon.
No report.
From the Northern Virginia Transit Commission, Ms. Hudgens.
Mr. Chairman, I have no report other than to welcome our two new federal members, Mr. Downey, who is a Virginia resident, and Mr. Costa, who is a D.C. resident, and welcome you and look forward to serving you.
Then I move that we move into executive session. This executive session is for one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to establish a staff transition and succession process. So we will be talking about the process by which we find an interim general manager and search for a new general manager. So moved. Is there a second? Mr. Zimmerman seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. That is unanimously adopted, and this 1,348th meeting of the Board of Directors is adjourned.
Thank you.